day.
A queer exploration of the Eras Tour.
With your hosts, Speak Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here and I'm queer and I'm definitely a gayler.
One of your other hosts for tonight, Elsia123, aka Vina. I think we've just had an off mic discussion that has determined that I too am a gayler. And we have a third host with us tonight.
Yes, I am your guest host for the evening, Kelsey, aka Vina's fiance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is a status update for a long time.
Yes, it is. How long have you been thinking about that?
Not, I just thought of it right
now. Oh, I'm glad you included it. Yes. We got to go to the Eras Tour engaged, which was really, really fun. So tonight we are going to talk about the Eras Tour. Kelsey and I got to see it when it was here in Seattle a couple of weeks ago, actually on my birthday eve. My birthday, the midnight of my birthday happened as we were walking out of the stadium. And it was everything you could want it to be and more. And we're just excited to talk about it and talk about all the gay stuff and answer some questions that Joanna has for us.
I'm so excited about this. All right. So, Vina, you had seen Taylor before the Eras Tour.
Yes.
You had seen her a couple of times, actually. Is that right?
I had seen her once. I had seen her when I was in high school. I saw her at the Speak Now Tour. And I felt incredibly old when we were at Eras and we were sitting next to these two girls who I, like, couldn't gauge their age, but they were clearly young. And I told them that I had seen the Speak Now Tour. And they reacted like I said, like I had seen like Paul McCartney when he was young or something. Like they were like, oh my God, the Speak Now Tour. Oh my God. Like it was like a legendary tour from before their time.
You're like a queer elder.
Yes. Speak Now Tour. Yes. So I had seen her with my mom. We had gone together. It was really hot night. And it was just incredible. It was very magical, and you know, it was Enchanted and Love Story, and it was when Taylor's sort of aesthetic was very like princessy, so it was a lot of that, a lot of glitter, and she was amazing. But this was even more spectacular for a variety of reasons.
For sure. Kelsey, had you ever seen her in concert before?
No, I had never been able to see her in concert before, but this is like kind of the first perfect concerts,
yeah,
for Taylor, just because you get like this tour through all of her different albums. So if you couldn't see an earlier tour, like I often couldn't,
yeah,
it was like you got to recapture a little bit of the magic, which mm-hmm. was wonderful.
Yeah.
Nice. Now, we were discussing our gaylerness. There are some people who believe that Taylor Swift herself maybe queer. I would count myself in that camp. And then I said, you know, you can also be a gayler just if you are someone who interprets her songs through a gay lens, which, you know, you said you would certainly maybe tiptoe on that end of the continuum. Although, as I pointed out, you personally have convinced myself and your own mother that Taylor may be queer. So if yeah. you yourself are not a gayler, you are definitely like a gateway to gayler belief systems for other people.
My mom sent me a text like 2 days before the show. She was listening to some Taylor and she just sends me this text that goes, "Is dress about a woman?" with like a whole bunch of question marks next to it, which was like a conversation we had had before. But I think she had forgotten. And then she listened to it again and she was like, it just seemed like it was about a woman. So I found that very funny.
Yes. So did the concert, did it move the needle for you on whether you think that Taylor herself could be queer?
I mean, I could see it, I think. It was clear that, like, a number of her dancers were queer. There were also, like, So we, the show that we were at, Haim was the opener, and they came out and did No Body, No Crime. And I mean, there was a lot of physical touching during that number. Mm-hmm. What about you, baby?
I don't know if I would say that, like, the live performance convinced me that she may be queer. It did convince me that she's a control freak. Also, like, kind of like a fastidious queen offshoot, it can be.
Sure.
But I don't know.
I think it convinced me that I'm very queer for her.
Oh, that is my next question, was did it convince, did you become more queer by experiencing the show, and if so, by what percent?
Do you want to take this one, baby?
So here's the thing about watching Vina watch this show, is that it was several different times. It was really wonderful because we had like seats that were pretty high up, not quite in the nosebleed section, but pretty close to it. So you could see her on the stage like below us, but then there's also like this massive screen. Everybody's seen the pictures. So it's not only seeing her, the tiny person, but also seeing her blown up with like her makeup and her hair and all the outfits she has on. And you turned to me several times throughout the show and said, she looks incredible. Like, it was just like, you were just blown away.
Well, did you want to talk about a specific part of the show?
Yeah, we can talk about, I mean, do we want to go chronologically through the show?
We can go chronologically through the show.
Because we can talk, I think we should get this off, you know.
Yeah.
We can talk about this first, so we don't forget about it.
Okay.
But, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, there was a certain point towards the end in the midnight section during vigilante shit. Where I saw you watching the performance and I turned to you and, you know, kind of had to speak loudly into your ear because everybody was screaming. I said, you're here with your wife. And I just want you to remind you of that.
I was singing along to every song. I fully stopped singing. At that time, I was like, my attention is elsewhere. Well, and when the first time I had seen footage of the choreography for Vigilante Shit, a song I am on record as saying I do not like, but I actually stopped breathing, I think. Yes.
I noticed.
Yes.
Vina, I am afraid that I may have to declare you a somewhat unreliable narrator regarding your own Taylor fandom, because we have discussed this, like, you're not a Gaylor, but you may have converted other people to be Gaylors. You are also very much on record as saying that you are not a fan of vigilante shit, but it seems like, you know, it seems like in the moment at the concert, there might have been another story that was
that what was being did you presented. Say? I'm constantly changing, shifting, you know, I'm not boxing myself in to one narrative.
I understand. Okay. So here's another question of the audience. I mean, she's playing these enormous, enormous stadium shows. Like, how queer was the audience, do you think?
Well, I don't know about the entire audience, but our section was so lovely.
Oh,
my
God.
They were so sweet.
They were the best. So we were sitting in the section and before, sorry, baby, did I cut you off? Before the show started, you know, we were taking a million pictures and we took a picture with our hands out with our engagement rings showing. And this woman behind us was like, are you guys engaged? And we said, yes. And she was really sweet. She actually, her mom was like a jeweler. And so she like looked at my ring and she was like, oh, I think that's like 1920s. And I was like, oh yeah, it is. And she, I think, was there with her son. And then next to her was, a lesbian couple. And, they were just so lovely. And we started slow dancing during Love Story.
During
Lover. There was another thing that happened during Love Story. Yeah. We started slow dancing during Lover, and unbeknownst to us, the mom had was filming us the whole time, and then, in a nice way, not in a creepy way. and the I just started calling her in my head the butch lesbian because she was felt like our little guardian angel of the night. She was like, we turned around and she like had tears in her eyes and she was like, I love you guys, like this is so beautiful. And then she, during Love Story, she leaned down to me and said, I'm a Gaylor. She self-identified as a Gaylor, which felt like, it just felt good. It was just like good, queer, happy energy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, I would say it was like the nicest like concert crowd I've ever experienced. Like everybody was just so happy to be there. People were supportive. People were kind. People like gave us bracelets. We hadn't made any bracelets, but people were just like giving us bracelets. Yeah, people were great.
Now, do you think that that butch lesbian was a Gaylor when she walked in, or do you think you made her a Gaylor as you have been known to do?
You know, I didn't ask, but it's hard to. She was also like dirt, like screaming a lot during vigilante shit. She was like, "I'm dying, I'm dead. She's killed me."
Yeah. And another lovely thing from our butch guardian angel was I was trying not to take too much like film footage or too many pictures during the show because I just wanted to experience it. But I did take a video of us singing along to, you know, the infamous part of "You Need to Calm Down."
Yeah.
Of "Shade Never Made Anybody Less Gay." And I didn't even realize it at the time when I was filming it, because I think I was just paying attention to the stage, but I noticed it when I played the video back, was our butch guardian angel leaned into the frame and screamed with us, "Shade never made anybody less gay."
Yeah.
And it was just like this moment of like, I was like too, just like in the moment to even realize it, but it was so beautiful.
It was really beautiful. It was just like, you know, I mean, that song gets mocked and perhaps sometimes rightly so, but it was just this like beautiful moment of like just a bunch of people screaming about that it's okay to be gay. And like specifically like in this moment, like three lesbians on camera screaming it together.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that like community that a concert can give. And but also just like at this specific moment in time when it just feels like queer people are kind of under attack, like throughout the country, like I love that Taylor Swift is doing these gigantic shows where like the audience is there and is saying those words.
Yeah I agree. I have like a sort of loose concert itinerary with just some random observations. Should we should we get through? So I have sort of my notes are a little ramshackle, but
can I start by asking you what were the bonus songs? What were the surprise songs for your show?
So it was "Message in a Bottle" and "Tied Together with a Smile."
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm sure we'll get to there as you give us your rundown, but I just wanted to know those up front since that's like a main through line. All right.
Of course. Oh, well, the other thing we should also mention is that we caused an earthquake.
Yes. Yes.
Seattle fans who are known to be a very like rambunctious, enthusiastic crowd, we caused a little bit of an earthquake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. During Shake It Off.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I felt it before then because, you know, Miss Americana is like technically the opener, and it's a great opener, I have to say, because they just reverb and like repeat. Mm-hmm. "It's Been a Long Time Coming" as like the first dancers essentially come out, and she sings a little bit of it. But the first like real song that she's doing in almost its entirety is "Cruel Summer." And like when we got to the bridge of like, you know, crying in the car and all that stuff, I could feel the ground move underneath my feet.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, like, is this, I had this moment of like, is this stadium going to hold? Like, it was just like, oh, okay. Everybody's dancing at the exact same time. It was incredible.
And that was the song, like Kelsey was, that was the song that she wanted to hear live more than anything. Like before she even announced the set, before Taylor even announced the set list, Kelsey was like, I hope she does Cruel Summer. And it's the second song. So you were just like.
It was just like at the highest energy level that I was throughout the night so I could fully enjoy it.
Oh my God.
It was wonderful. I love that song.
It's such a good song. It was so much fun. And it's, so I wrote down like some of the lyrics of the night that really stand out to me as being very gay. And I mean, "Cruel Summer" has a couple of examples. You know, "I love you, ain't that the worst thing you've ever heard. And, you know, "Don't want to keep secrets just to keep you." Like, yeah, it writes itself. Mm-hmm. It writes itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, if I told you that there were pictures of her entering Carly Kloss's, like living space through the garden gate, I'm just, you know, if someone was going to try to convince someone else to be a gayer, that might be a fact.
That might be evidence that one might use. Yeah. 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 She does this very, like, very nerdy thing after where she's like, you make me feel so powerful. You make me feel like the man. And then she goes into the man. And it, like, part of the joy of being a Taylor Swift fan is embracing how deeply embarrassing it is to be a Taylor Swift fan. And that, like, that was on full display in such a delightful way. Like, she's so, it's all so earnest. And, like, you just have to kind of, it's like a wave. You just have to, like, let it wash over you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that there is something about that. I was thinking when we were going to be talking about Taylor and we were going to be talking about, like, her concert and how gay is it, in his book, which is part of, like, the Tales of the City series, Significant Others, Armistead Maupin talks about Bruce Springsteen and how Michael Tolliver has, like, an opinion that, like, in every generation, there's one straight guy that, like, straight men are allowed to be gay for. And in the 70s, it was Bruce Springsteen. And I was thinking about, like, I wonder if, like, here in like, these many years later, if, like, Taylor Swift makes everybody a little bit more gay. And then I was thinking about Taylor Swift and Bruce Springsteen, and I was thinking about how, like, dudes have been, like, selling out Bruce Springsteen tours for years and years and years. And, like, it's taken seriously, whereas Taylor Swift shows, like, I mean, Bruce Springsteen is pretty freaking earnest too. And nobody, like, yeah, nobody has to feel like it's cringeworthy or like it's embarrassing. Like, I feel like with Taylor Swift, like, she's kind of teaching us that, like, as women and as fans, we actually don't need to be embarrassed by how much we, yeah, like her songs, even if they are, you know, even if every song isn't our favorite or whatever. I mean, Bruce Springsteen did a whole Tunnel of Love album, whatever, but yeah, so.
Yeah, and didn't he, like, kiss his bassist on stage
all the time
in the, yeah, like in the 70s and 80s, and, like, had, like, this very profound, like, being, like, kind of in love with members of his band, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He, like, there's the album cover for, like, where he has the bandana in his back pocket.
Yeah,
yeah,
yes. Yes. Yeah. Oh, it's a great album cover. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I like the read of, like, Taylor Swift is sort of the Bruce Springsteen of our time in that way. Like, there is this kind of, like, I refuse to, like, I'm not going to hate being a rock star. I'm going to embrace everything about it. Quality, mm-hmm, I think, to both of them.
And I feel particularly with the Eras Tour, even though I haven't, like, gone to any of the shows, but I have, like, been listening to, like, the set list and kind of keeping up as much as I can with all of the stuff that's going on with it. I feel like she's also saying, like, you don't have to be embarrassed, like, as a grown-ass woman, you don't have to be embarrassed of, like, the girl you were or the feelings that she,
yeah,
had. Like, you can have grace for that. You can, like, still embrace that. You can, like, transform it into, like, part of your current story.
Yeah, I think that's really true. It's funny. I was kind of thinking of that. We're jumping all over the place, but that's okay. During the Red section, especially during, like, 22, which is obviously a song that is, like, you know, she comes out and she's wearing, like, the big t-shirt and the stupid hat, and she's singing about being 22 and she's 32. And it's like, there's something about it that, and it was an energy that I really felt in the live space of, like, she's laughing a little bit at herself, but she's also, like, having a lot of grace for herself. And in doing that, she's sort of teaching us to feel the same way about ourselves, mm-hmm, in this way that I found really, like, beautiful. Like, she's not saying you can't laugh at yourself. She's not saying you have to be, like she's definitely coming to it from the place of adulthood. But there's a sort of, a sort of generosity of spirit there that I think is really, really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And I also think being 22 speaks to a level of, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Sure.
And so, and I also, like, kind of, have responsibilities, but maybe less responsibilities. So that allows me to like stay up all night, be out with my friends. And there are even, you know, days as, you know, a mid late 20 something year old or even older where you have moments like this of like, you can access what it felt like to be 22 and feel it again.
Sure.
Which I think that allows people to do and why it'll be an enduring hit, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Speaking, going back to the lover set for a second, that really, I found very affecting is, you know, there's the line in Lover, you know, but who could stay, who could ever leave me, but who could stay? And the way that she did it live, she's repeating that last part over and over again, who could stay, and then it goes into you could stay. And she's sort of looking out at the audience. And I really just have this moment of recognizing like, oh my goodness, like, who, like, we're the ones who have stayed as her relationships have ended. And like, what that must be like for her as a person, you know, that like, the relationships have ended and the relationship that she wrote that song about has since ended. And we're the ones who can stay, and how sort of bittersweet that must be in a way. I just found it really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's also really interesting to look at that in the context of so much throughout her career, she was tabloid bait of like, people are only interested in you because, or I'm sure she had whispers in her ear of people are only interested in you and from like the teeny bopper magazines mm-hmm. to project their feelings onto you. Nobody actually likes your music. You know, you're a blip in time, like that line in Miss Americana. She's like, I'm almost 30. I'm never going to have this type of success again. And then you fast forward the tape 3 years later, and yeah. She's the biggest she's ever been because of this enduring legacy of her immense body of work, which this yeah. tour really exemplifies.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So from there, we went into the Fearless set, and I was really finding myself thinking about the Liars a little bit. And sorry to take it there, baby.
No, it's okay. Let's stay on topic.
This is technically a PLL podcast. Because that idea of like, what does it mean to come home again? And I was thinking about how when PLL came back for the, you know, the 5 years forward, I think something that they struggled with was how to sort of recapture the magic of the early years. And what I was really like kind of thinking about with this section of the tour is like, she's playing her old hits, but she's reinterpreting them. These are songs that she's actually like re-recorded and owns and sort of has been able to revisit as an adult. And yet she's also still creating things that are new. It's not just like a copy of a copy of a copy. And how like the power of art that dares to like reinvent itself versus art that just sort of like stays safe and you end up with season 7 of Pretty Little Liars. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that's interesting about the Eras Tour is to like this is a silly example, but there's that Capital One commercial where Taylor has like, there are all the different versions of Taylor in the yeah. elevator, and you kind of look at that and you're like, you know, each album has almost been selling like a different version of Taylor yeah. Swift in its own way, and it's interesting to see how like they kind of have like changed and evolved, and how like our understanding of all of those versions has like informed like the idea of the kind of Rorschach idea of Taylor that everyone kind of has in their own heads.
Well, even the idea of people being like, well, I'm dressing up as Lover, I'm dressing up as Folklore, like the idea of like, I'm gonna dress up as an era of this person, like I'm turning it into a costume, you know, I think that's really interesting. And it reminds me of like all the interesting identity work on PLL, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Did you have anything you wanted to say about the Fearless set?
No, not really. I mean, just to say, as somebody who had never seen her live before, like the feeling of listening to You Belong With Me or Love Story and realize, A, her vocals are just leaps and bounds better than they are on those original recordings. Like, it's incredible. And also hearing that live and being like, oh, of course these were massive hits. Of course they're charting again when the re-records are released. You know, these are like kind of almost perfect pop songs, like country pop songs.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
And she also picked, like, for the songs that, because, like, I don't think she sang All of You Belong With Me, or maybe she did, but I feel like any of the songs where she didn't sing all of them, she picked the perfect parts to sing live. She picked the parts that people want to sing along to, which was really fun.
Love that.
Yeah. You know, we went into Evermore after that, got our very gay No Body, No Crime with Haim.
I was so excited.
You were so excited.
I was so excited because I love that song. You're lukewarm on that song, but I was, it was so good.
It was great. It was fabulous live. It was really fun.
I also think post-show, I'm a bigger fan of Haim than you are.
Yeah,
because I've like listened to those albums again and be like, shit, I want to learn how to play guitar. Like, this is cool.
Yeah. Yeah, they were very fun. They were very fun.
I have a quick question. You talked about people dressing up as different eras or different albums. What do you feel like would be the queerest album-related costume? I feel like the Lover album has such a bisexual color scheme, but I also feel like Folklore and Evermore, like, there are such strong flannel vibes.
And a lot of, like, cottagecore lesbian vibes.
Mm-hmm. Also very Virginia Woolf.
Sure.
So you can make that kind of connection as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you dressed up as like a butch interpretation of James from Betty, that would be quite queer. What was interesting was the intersection, because when it happened that like the weekend she was in Seattle was also the weekend that Barbie was released, there was a real intersection of like Barbie related costumes and Taylor related costumes. Like, there was a woman who was wearing a shirt, it was like a black shirt, and it said in pink font, written and directed by Greta Gerwig. There were a lot of Barbie shirts, so that was there. It really felt like those two things were like very much in conversation with one another at this concert in particular, because of the weekend it was.
Nice.
So that was fun. I just have to say that in the song Willow, the whole idea of like wreck my plans is very, very gay. And also, I've told Kelsey this a million times, but one of my favorite podcasts, Las Culturistas with Bowen Yang and Matt Rogers, they, whenever Taylor releases new music, they do like a song by song dissection of the album. And when they got to Evermore and they got to Willow, Bowen Yang, they're like, this song is so sexy. And Bowen Yang, I'm going to butcher it, but he's like, wreck my plans, that's my man, I want to say that to a man while he's entering me. So I always think of that with that song, which makes it extra gay. A Reputation, I enjoyed those songs so much more live. It's very sexy, it's very fun. That is an album that I was very lukewarm on when it first came out. And there are still some songs that I'm kind of lukewarm on. We actually went and watched the Reputation tour footage, which is also a great time and also very gay. But, oh my gosh, those songs are so fun live.
Yeah, they're just incredible on all the fire. And, like, the thing from, like, the transition from Don't Blame Me to Look What You Made Me Do.
Yes.
Of like, don't blame me, don't blame me, don't blame me for what you made me do. It's like, oh, it's so fucking good.
Yeah, it's so good. Also, the line, I would fall from grace just to touch your face, from Don't Blame Me.
Mm-hmm. Also, Delicates, the best fan chant of all time.
Oh my God.
One, what? Two, three, let's go, bitch.
Yes.
Like, just so fucking good.
It's so fun. And you didn't know about that until recently.
Yeah, I didn't know about it because I wasn't really keyed into Taylor stuff when the Reputation tour was happening.
Sure.
I kind of had like a bit of a renaissance.
Yeah.
Shortly afterwards, because I did not like Reputation as an album when it came out. And so I just kind of checked out. But it's just like incredible, and I've re-listened to it a couple of times since then. I think there's still the tracks I don't like, I still don't really like them.
Yeah.
But it's just so good. And also, speaking of Reputation, another song that I don't care for, but I think sounded incredible live, was in the red section, I knew you were trouble.
Yeah.
Is one of these songs of, like, I don't know if it was the arrangement or just hearing it live, but I'm just like, oh, this could have been on Reputation.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's one of the reasons why I feel like that song doesn't really work on that album, but it would work on Reputation with a few production changes. So it's just like this idea that these ideas that show up on subsequent albums have been churning for a really long time.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And it's funny. Oh, I just lost my train of thought. Mm-hmm. I was going to say something about that, and then I lost it. I don't know what I was going to say. It was really fun to hear, like, some of those songs that maybe we weren't as sure about. Like, I just think the way that she formatted the concert, and I keep saying she, like, her team, she and her team, put, like, the way, the structure that they decided, because it's not like they just go chronologically. Like, they're bouncing all over the place. It just works really well. It just works really, really well. So, you know, Betty, obviously such a gay song. So fun. So delightful.
Also had my favorite outfit of the night, which was very exciting.
The folklore outfit.
The folklore outfit has the green dress, which is probably my favorite outfit of all the outfits.
It's a great dress.
Many different outfits on the tour.
It's a great dress.
It's so good. That, like, mossy covered cabin in the folklore set, which is, like, also really a testament to, I'm sure we could look it up, but whoever directed the show and whoever, like, was, like, the stage choreographer, mm-hmm. of just, like, I kept having these moments of realizing that they're so good at redirecting your attention exactly where they want it to. So when you come back to the stage, there's something new, which, like, had to have taken a huge amount of time and energy to set up. But it's like, you don't see it until they want you to see it.
Yeah.
And we were high above the stage, so it's not like we were at floor level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they're really doing it from a 360 experience, which is incredible.
Yeah. Agreed. August into Illicit Affairs into My Tears Ricochet. Like, it's almost a medley the way she did that. So fucking good.
It's just gut punch after gut punch after gut punch.
Yeah. And she's just, like, she's, like, singing her heart out. I will say those three songs together feel super queer. It's a lot of, like, you know, the love that hides in the shadows. You can't go home again. Like, you know, also, like, a lot about infidelity, which is very interesting. But yeah, she's just, like, that's at a point in the night too where everybody's, like, kind of exhausted. We were very high. It's like just this catharsis of just this, like, emotional, you know, screaming. And this is after we've already done All Too Well, which was itself a huge emotional cathartic experience. Yeah.
I think I had to sit down through some of the slower songs because I was like, my feet hurt so much from dancing and being on my feet.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I love these songs, but, like, I gotta sit down. If it's just a couple of beats per minute too slow to dance to, I gotta sit down.
Cause, like, you knew that, like, we wanted to be up and dancing during, like, 1989.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was next, and, like, Style is a very gay song, I think.
It's so gay.
It's really good. It's really gay. For some reason, the line, I've been there too a few times, I always think that's a very gay line. I don't know why. I just do. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was incredible. Mm-hmm. It was so incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, we're just talking. Do you have any interjections?
No, I enjoy hearing all about it. As you know, 1989 had long been one of my favorite of her albums.
Yeah.
So I'm super, super excited to hear, like, any thoughts about that particular set.
Yeah, it was really, like, that was another section where it was very much like, oh my God, like, all of these songs, like, of course they were massive pop hits, you know?
Of course this was an album that changed the face of pop music.
Yeah, yeah. There's the whole section in Blank Space when they have the golf clubs and they're, like, destroying the car, which was very, very fun. it's a nice, it's also like a really nice kind of burst of energy because it comes right before the acoustic set. So it's like a nice burst of energy before we go into the acoustic set. And then we go from that into like the finale of Midnights. So it's a really good, like, it's just this, yeah, it's just everybody's on their feet. Everybody's dancing. And yeah, it's so fun. It's mm-hmm. just so much fun. She didn't do, I think she didn't do Wildest Dreams, but I think there were like elements of Wildest Dreams. There was some kind of like Seven she did as like a poem, like a poem, which she didn't, it was like a audio thing while she was getting into costume and everything, which also that, but it was like interspersed with elements from Wildest Dreams. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. She was like, say you'll remember me standing in a white dress, nice dress.
In a nice dress.
In a nice dress. And then she, like, goes into Seven, sorry, baby. Mm-hmm. Which, that is such a heartbreaking song.
Mm-hmm. Also, doing your songs as spoken word poems, that was a major Ani DiFranco thing from, like, her early albums. Sure. So I'm also going to call that a little bit gay.
Well, and also the song itself. I mean, Seven, you know, I mean, to tell you, I think your house is haunted. You know, you won't have to hide in the closet. Like, come on. Come on. Yeah. 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 And then
not that you're trying to convince anyone to be a gayler, but if you were, you might point out that lyric.
It's just facts. I'm just pointing. Our secret songs were Message in a Bottle and Tied Together with a Smile. We were rooting for New Year's Day, but they were still really fun.
Yeah. I don't think that one has been done on the tour, has it?
I think New Year's Day has. I think it was like maybe the last night in LA.
Okay.
I think I saw that. I haven't been keeping track of the tour now that our show is done, but there's something. But we might be able to see footage of that because presumably they are filming. I think they're filming every one of the LA nights and they're going to edit them together.
Yeah.
To make a movie of the Eras tour, just like they did for Reputation, because obviously, you know, you would have.
Of course. Of course.
Now, so you guys were hoping for New Year's Day. I was so interested, you know, when you told me that was a song that you guys were really rooting for. I feel like that song has kind of a sad song vibe to it. Do you feel like it's more like soothing, uplifting, or do you also feel like it's a little bit sad? What is your take?
I find it really romantic. I think that there's a wistfulness to it, but I feel like a lot of the songs on Reputation, here's the thing. I feel like Reputation gets billed as, and I'm sure I'm not the first person to say this, but I feel like it gets billed as like, it's her bad girl album. It's her revenge album. And there's certainly elements of that. But I also think it's actually largely an album about falling in love and about the fear of falling in love when you've lost a lot in your past. And I think that that's kind of what New Year's Day is about to me. It's this idea of like, you're the one I want to be with no matter what, but I'm kind of terrified by how much I want this, which is, I think, a lot of like Delicate, I think, is that way. I think King of My Heart is that way too.
What do you think about the line, don't read the last page?
I see that as, and this might be a little bit of projection on my part, but I see that as like, we can't plan for everything, even though we want to. So we just kind of have to trust the process. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's also a line that implies like, I'm not ready to say this to your face yet, but I've already decided I'm in this.
Yeah.
And I think it's also a little bit of the terror of feeling like, what if I'm in this deeper than the other person is? Because we don't really have that. It's because I think that's a song about wanting that relationship. She doesn't have, the narrator at least doesn't have it yet.
Yeah.
She says, I want to be there for your bad days, but I'm not ready to say it to your face yet. Which is that kind of terrifying in between time of like knowing you love somebody, but you haven't told them yet.
Not that you're speaking from experience.
No,
whatsoever.
Not at all.
What's your interpretation of that song, Joanna?
Well, you guys have such a lovely and hopeful interpretation of that song. I don't really want to be like, I don't want to bring out like my Debbie Downer
I want to hear.
Well, I think she says, don't read the last page because she knows that she actually doesn't stay. I think she's telling a soothing story of like, I stay when it's hard and when you're pushing me away. And I think that like she's saying that kind of because she knows that maybe in the end she doesn't have it in her. So I kind of think that's why we have the don't read the last page, because it's like a soothing song. She's telling like a soothing story of like the person that she wants to be in, the relationship she wants to be. But that, I mean, that was how I always interpreted the song. But then you were like, oh, I love that song. And I was like, oh, there's probably a more upbeat interpretation.
I think so. And with any Taylor song, there's like a million ways to interpret.
And I mean, also don't read the last page because spoiler alert, or don't read the last page because like, you know, every story has an ending and the ending is sad because the story is over, you know, like there are lots of interpretations.
Well, and I mean, not to get like too personal on this podcast, but
when have you ever done that?
But you know, I remember when you and I were first dating, and a thing that I don't know that I said to you, but I remember saying to other people is like, I can't skip ahead. I can't skip ahead to like see if it works out, and that scares me. You know, I just have to like go with it, and you know, and I am a person who often, I have sort of broken myself with this habit, but I often read the last page of books to the point that a friend of mine who wrote a book in her dedication acknowledged that. She was like, and to the one person I know who's going to read the last page of this book, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I think that was one of the scariest parts of falling in love to me, but it all worked out in the end.
Well, like, as Madeline L'Engle says, faith is not the absence of doubt. It's choosing to believe in spite of all your doubts. So.
Yeah. It's beautiful. My next note just says, midnight set equals hot and fun. She has a great outfit.
Yeah, it's great. It's very simple, but it's amazing.
Yeah. So Midnight's was so fun, just great outfits, great everything.
Did you have any favorite songs from that particular era?
Well, I love Lavender Haze as a song. I think my reaction to Vigilante Shit was probably the most profound.
would you describe the choreography for Vigilante?
Okay.
I mean, not to say, I mean, perhaps it was just a stunning vocal performance. Perhaps it was just the energy of the crowd that got you more into the song.
So here's the thing. When you watch the movie Chicago as a young gay girl, something imprints in your brain when you see Cell Block Tango, and something in your brain says chair work. At least that was my experience. So when Taylor Swift started doing some Fosse-esque chair work, including a lot of like hands on her body, it unlocked something for me. We'll just say that.
How does Taylor sit in the chair?
What's that?
How does Taylor sit in the chair?
How doesn't she sit in the chair? she does straddle the chair, so gay. There's also a lot of like, she's suspended over the chair and then like sits in a way that
on beat.
It's very it's a sight to behold. How would you describe it, baby?
I would also describe a particular moment in like the lyrics of this song, which are very gay.
Yes.
She's like like kind of standing over the chair a little bit and says the thing, because it's not a stunning vocal performance because she's kind of speak singing throughout most of that song, which is kind of why I don't like it.
Yeah.
But it's, she says the phrase, she's, I'm thick as thieves with your ex-wife.
Yes.
She looks so pretty driving in your Benz. And like, as she's saying that, she like, is like trailing her hand down her body.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like this thing of just like, I knew you were just transfixed.
She's trailing her hand down her body, and then like her hand like hovers over her crotch, and she kind of makes this like scandalized face mm-hmm. at the audience, like, uh-huh. oh, you didn't think I was actually gonna go there, did you? And uh-huh. it's like, it was just a lot. Mm-hmm.
I think it's also important to mention that she's wearing a very, let's say, revealing bodysuit with like a sparkly thigh garter. It's very like, we're gonna have the garter toss at this wedding a little bit.
Yes you know? Mm-hmm. So it was, yeah. And it's, you made a really good point that song has like, part of why you, I think neither one of us are like super into that song just as a song, is that it's, there's like too much kind of space in that song. Mm-hmm. And I think having a really visually stimulating sequence it really fills in that space.
Mm-hmm. Also just the idea of just like the things that it's hard to hear like in a headphone for that song, where it's this very like what sounds on the album like a very quiet kind of machine-like reverberation on the track.
Yeah.
When you amplify that to a stadium, it's like you're hearing like vroom, 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 like yeah. this thing where it sounds incredible and you like, yeah. feel it in your body on top of like,
oh, I was feeling it in my body.
Oh yeah, you were. on top of like everybody screaming and losing their minds.
Yeah.
It feels incredible. It fills a space in a way mm-hmm. that you just like can't replicate on that album.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the highlight for you in the midnight section?
Ooh, I really love Lavender Haze as a song, but like, I gotta say, like, Karma.
It's so fun.
It's so fun. It's so good. I thought that song was so fucking stupid for so long. And then, like, I had a reevaluation of it recently when I had a couple of situations where I felt like, oh, this is Karma coming back to, you know, help me out a little bit mm-hmm. of just like, I just be like, you know what? People are being shitty. And I'm just living my life, and that's fun. It was really, really, it felt really, really good and cathartic to like scream that song at the end of the concert.
Yeah. It's such a fun, like when I first found out that she was, that's how she was closing the show, I was like, oh, come on, Taylor. Like, okay, we're being a little extra. But it actually, it's amazing. It's an incredible way to end the show. It's really a way of saying like, you know, I'm still here, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's so fun. It feels like just this joyous moment. It feels like a celebration of her fans. It just feels, it's glorious. It's bright on stage. It's, there was like fire and confetti and
glitter
and fireworks. And it was amazing. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it was an incredible way to close the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, like, Karma is kind of, like, there are so many songs that Taylor has done over her career, like, you know, Bad Blood, like, you know, Band-Aids Don't Fix Bullet Holes, and, you know, like, there are just so many songs that are kind of, like, about don't be a shitty person to Taylor. Don't do
yeah.
it. Just, and Karma is, I feel like, is kind of... it is kind of like at the top of that pyramid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I would absolutely agree. Yeah. And it's kind of a bitchy song, but it's also a joyously bitchy song. I feel like some of her other songs that are kind of a similar theme feel, there's a bitterness to them that I think is not present in Karma.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. For yeah. sure. But that seems like a really nice one to like send people off with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was the end of the show.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. Okay. So of the gay lyrics that you heard, what do you feel like was the gayest lyric of the night?
Gosh. I think I'm personally going to go with I Would Fall from Grace Just to Touch Your Face. What would you say?
Probably something from Delicate.
Really?
Yeah, just like the idea of, you know, is it too soon to say this yet? I'm having feelings that I shouldn't be feeling, but it just feels real, you know?
Again, not that you're speaking from experience.
Absolutely not. No.
Not at all.
Okay. So whether or not you believe in your heart that Taylor herself is gay, when during the show did Taylor seem the most gay? Was it when she was singing Betty? Was it when she was singing Cruel Summer? Was it when she was doing, I want to try to do like chair, like your whole face lit up when you said chair work. You talked about it. Like, was it when she was doing chair work in vigilante shit and talking about how pretty she looks driving in your Benz? Was it another moment for you?
I actually think it might have been No Naughty No Crime. Because she was, like, really vibing with Haim. She was really vibing with them. Yeah. Yeah. What would you say?
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. Just because that's the really... Oh, you know what? Actually, she played Last Great American Dynasty, right?
She did.
I think there's a little, like... There's a little exchange she has with the dancers when she sings the bridge on that song. It's just like, and then it was bought by me. And it's a little bit like, you know, not in a wink at the female dancer. I'm just like, you know, I am like a single woman and with this big old beach house. Who am I going to have over? You
know, yeah. A little bit, yeah. Yeah.
You know,
sure.
A little hiding in plain sight. It's very like upwardly mobile lesbian, you know?
Yes.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love that for her.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. So bonus songs. I mentioned this to you before, but do you have any comments on the fact that Maroon, which Kelsey, I know you've previously tapped Maroon as one of the extremely gay songs of the Taylor oeuvre, that song was the bonus song. It is one of the only repeat bonus songs on the tour so far. And it was played on August 3rd, which just coincidentally, I am sure, happens to be the birthday of one Ms. Carly Kloss.
I did not know that. It's all lining up.
Never beating the allegations.
Never beating the allegations.
I mean, I do think that that's very gay. Like, that is irrefutably, unquestioningly homosexual.
Yeah, it's like drama, and also like, also, I don't know where Carly Kloss lives, or like, I don't know if she has like a base in LA or New York. I'm sure she has homes all over the place. But like, that is a thing of like, during those LA shows, has the most famous people in all of them because they're in LA. So it's this little thing of like, I'm going to, and if I'm going to put on a Gaylor hat for a second, that is the show that Carly is most likely to be at. You know?
Yeah.
Or at least hear about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, another just like gay celebrity moment I'll tap is, you know, I know Emma Stone is a big fan of Taylor, and there's been like footage of her dancing at one of the concerts. And When Emma Falls in Love, which is rumored to be about Emma Stone, is like such a gay song and feels very much, it's like, okay, Taylor, you're like singing this song about your like beautiful, incredible, amazing Cleopatra-esque friend. Like, and how you want to be her. Right. Okay.
Sorry. You want to love like hers.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there is almost nothing more funny than when people are like, this song is like, it's like about one of Taylor's celebrity female friends, but not in a gay way. Like,
it's an ode to male friendship.
Yeah, like people are doing that about the Emma song. And then I feel like the people who think that Champagne Problems is about Justin Bieber and Selena Gomez, him proposing and her turning him down, like, people who believe that narrative, it's just like fascinating.
Wait, what?
People believe that. It's true.
This is an audio medium, so nobody can see my face right now except the three of us, but it's just like shock and disgust.
Well, especially because in that song, she has the lyrics like, one for the money, two for the show, I never was ready, so I watched you go. Like, the Big Magazine article about Taylor and Carly and their trip to Big Sur, like, the headline of it was one for the money, two for the show. Like, that's like a fact. That's like a fact that exists in the world if you look at the copy of that magazine. But yeah, it's definitely about, you know, it's like a story song. It's a story song about Selena and Justin Bieber.
Well, another funny thing is like most of the songs, she doesn't really do an intro about what they're about. She just starts playing them. And she makes very sure before Betty to be like, this is a story song. I thought about myself. And it's like, who are you trying to convince, Taylor?
Yeah, us or you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm offended that that song would be about Justin Bieber. Although, I do think that Taylor writing a song about Selena is very interesting. Because
and gay.
And very gay.
Gay
if
it was true.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very gay, but also, like, a lot of my shock is, like, the idea that a song that good could be inspired by Justin Bieber.
Yes.
I take offense to that.
Yes.
Valid.
I don't believe that.
Well, don't you also take offense to the idea that, like, many of her greatest hits are inspired by Joe?
Yeah, just, like, a thumb of a man who just, like, could never hold down a real job. Like, is just, like, God, what is, does he have family money? Is that just, like, what's going on?
I don't know.
Did he have dirt on the BBC?
So forgettable. I saw him in two different movies. And when she started dating him, I kept forgetting who he was and having to look up again and being like, oh, right. I saw two films that he was in. Who's he again? Like, it was, I feel like it coming out on the same weekend, her concert being on the same weekend that the Barbie movie came out.
Yeah,
like, their whole relationship was 100% like, he's just Ken, like,
he's just Joe. Yeah, she's everything and he's just Joe.
I who knows what the truth of anyone's like real life and relationships are, but I just feel like she had so many problems with like the paparazzi being all up in her relationships, and I feel like, well, wouldn't it be a huge relief to be associated with Joe Alwyn, who is just like a bucket of cold water. Like, people look at him and they just don't care. Like, you just cannot fathom any level of interest in whatever is going on there.
Yeah, he's like a paper towel.
He's just a paper towel. A damp paper towel.
A sweet nothing, you might say.
Yeah, well, I like that song.
I know you do, but like, still, Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, yeah. And also, like, if you take her, like, post-breakup releases as some version of the truth of what really happened.
Yeah.
Like, this idea that, you know, potentially, like, he couldn't handle the fame. He couldn't handle the fact that they would never have a, like, a normal life.
Sure.
And they just, like, could not make, they were just slowly dying for years.
Jesus, that's it's depressing.
Just, like, it's just so depressing.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. God.
I hope she's having fun wherever she goes.
Yeah, I hope she's, like, fucking one of her backup dancers.
Yeah, like that. Or, like, apparently there was, like, some NFL player who was at the show or whatever. But, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Also, there's, like, I feel like Taylor has had a lot of highly public but extremely, like, 3 months long relationships with dudes, which are very, like, well, was that a relationship or was that, like, a spread for People magazine? Like, what is going on with this? So, like, when I hear about stuff like that, like, especially, like, the news drop of that NFL player, like,
We'll see.
Yeah.
Who do you, so you have said that you think that all of this is smoke and mirrors for somebody on tour that she might be involved with?
I do. Oh, yeah, yeah. If you want like my personal conspiracy theory about it. Yeah, I think she might be involved with somebody who's touring. She has like a million like queer musicians who've been part of this tour.
Do you have one person in particular who you think it might be or who you hope it might be?
Not really. Although I did feel like there was that kind of, oh, look at what we just did thing where, who was it? Somebody was like making out with their boyfriend in the back of a Nicole Kidman selfie or something like that. And I was like, oh, look at this. Is this Dazzle Camouflage? Is this Taylor's actual girlfriend? I don't know.
Oh, you had a whole theory. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think that Taylor's image, I don't think anyone really would really argue that her image is like super carefully orchestrated and coordinated. And that we really only know like what Taylor wants us to know in terms of what's going on with her personal life.
Oh,
And I mean, I would also just say, like to everybody who thinks like the whole Gaylor thing, like, you know, there are articles that are like how Gaylor is like QAnon or whatever. Like, I would just say to those people, like, we also did not know that Whitney Houston was queer when Whitney Houston was a superstar. So
yeah, I didn't know that
very
at all.
Recently.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, what do you guys think about the rumors that Taylor might retire?
Not in a million fucking years.
That's what you think?
I think she's gonna keep touring even when she can't walk anymore. Like, I think she is such like a workhorse of just like, especially all these things of like, you know, she's on this backbreaking tour.
Yeah.
And she's still going into the studio and recording, and we don't know if it's new music or if it's re-recordings that she's continuing mm-hmm. to work on. We just don't know, but she's still doing it. If any time's the time to like not be recording stuff, it's while you're on this massive tour.
Yeah.
You know?
See, I think that she is going to maybe retire from performing, but go into maybe more writing and directing, like maybe directing feature films and maybe writing for like other artists, especially if her voice starts to give out at any point. That would be kind of my theory / sort of what I would want for her, because I want to see whatever the Taylor Swift like motion picture is.
Mm-hmm. Well, she has a movie deal. She has that movie deal to direct something, and she obviously gets a lot of like creative fulfillment from like writing and directing her own videos a lot of the time.
Yeah,
and stuff like that.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm really interested to see if she does. I agree. She is like, you know, I mean, I think we can tell this based on like how everyone dealt with the pandemic. Like, you know, what does Taylor do when there's like nothing else to do? She produces like multiple albums and releases them in like quick succession. Like, she's obviously not a person who's gonna like retire to a life of like lolling around in a hammock. I do think she could become a workaholic in like a different arena. And I'm also just interested in like the idea of like, at what point is she ever gonna feel like I've accomplished absolutely every milestone in a musical career that I, you know, like she had every, she like knocked the Beatles out of like having like the top, like all 10 of the top 10 songs being her songs, like all at the same time. Like, you know, she's accomplished like so much. I just wonder if she'll ever be like, well, now I'm going to go win my Oscar.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if anybody could do it, if anybody could win an EGOT, I would put money on Taylor.
Well, maybe not an EGOT. I don't think he's getting a Tony anytime soon.
Well, not for acting, but maybe if she wrote something.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
I mean, let's not rule out the possibility that her chair work could get her cast in Chicago at some point. At which moment, like, Venus Soul would actually like depart. Oh my God. It would like leave her body, and you know, good luck to everyone.
Yeah,
Taylor is like Roxy Hart.
Wow. I would. You'd have to bring me IV to the theater. Yeah. No, actually I think I'd want to see. Well, no. Okay. No, I think
now
I,
you have to say who, like, what show would you cast Taylor in?
Actually, I think Roxy Hart would be a great role for her because Roxy is a real tryhard.
Yeah.
And I think that Taylor would be very good in that. I think she'd be very good in that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Do we have any more we want to say about Eras?
I'm so glad that you guys got to go to the show. I am so glad that we got to talk about all things Taylor and Gaylor, etc. You both said what the gayest lyrics were. If there was one thing you could have changed about the show, would it have been that you got to hear New Year's Day, or would it have been something else?
Ooh, that's a really good question.
That is a good question. I wish she had picked something to play from Red that was not Bad Blood. I understand.
Well, Blood is from 1989, B.
Isn't it? Oh, shit. Something else from 1989. I wish we hadn't heard Bad Blood. It was fun, but I hate that song.
I also hate that song.
I wish she would stop performing it. But she can't because it was a lead single.
Yeah. I wish that the Red set had been different, I think. You know what? Also, I wish that she would have performed more songs from Speak Now. Mm. I think that would have, like, I would have loved to have heard, like, Dear John. Better Than Revenge would have been a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I think you would have had an aneurysm if she'd played that song.
That song or Picture to Burn. Like, if there was a debut section.
If there was more of a debut section, yeah. Our song, that would have been really fun. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Red, like, I love the song Holy Ground. I love Treacherous. I love State of Grace. That's one of my favorite songs of all of her songs. So I probably would have swapped out like 22, I Knew You Were Trouble, and We Were Never Getting Back Together. And I get that those are all singles and they're all like really fun, energetic songs, but I probably would have swapped them out with like Holy Ground, State of Grace, and Treacherous. Mm-hmm. Okay. Personally. Okay. Yeah.
Did you at any point leave to go to the bathroom? Because it's like a 3-hour concert.
We were there the whole time.
We were trying to time it because we had to, like, eat at the stadium.
Yeah.
Of just, like, she's going to go on in, like, 20... Like, we have to go to the bathroom now.
Yeah.
Because we're not going to want to leave.
Exactly.
One of my coworkers who was going to the Cincinnati show had been saying that she was trying to decide, like, what song was going to be like her bathroom break song.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, and I had not been at that point, like, really following the set list. And so I like pulled it up really quickly, and keep in mind also I was at work. So I blame this initial instinct on like, just like my operational efficiency part of my brain. But I looked at the set list thinking about like, well, what would be the go to the bathroom song? And I was like, oh, she's doing the 10-minute version of All Too Well. That's definitely your time. It's 10 minutes long and no one else is going to be leaving during that moment. And like, my coworker was like, she just looked at me like I imagine like in the Bible story when the king says like, cut the baby in half. Like, I imagine like that was the level of like, what are you suggesting? I maintain that was the right answer in an operational efficiency capacity, but certainly it did not. I did not like pull that from like my store of emotional intelligence.
Well, I have a question for you, which is if you are able to see Taylor in concert, which we are crossing our fingers that will happen, what would you hope her secret songs would be?
Oh man, what a great question. What a great question. I would love it to be any song that I can imagine is about Carly, but I can imagine that really any song is about Carly. So I might say Cornelia Street is one that I really, really like. I also, this is like one that I feel like I haven't seen on the set list. Getaway Car, I think, is a super fun song.
Yeah.
So I like that one a lot. But I mean, honestly, like anything from Evermore, anything from Folklore, anything from Midnights, like I really am a big fan of all three of those albums. So I would not be, the Cincinnati show that my coworker went to, she was talking about how one of the bonus songs was Ivy, and she just really, ooh, like, she loved that. And I was like, oh, that would be amazing. So like,
really, very gay.
Yeah, any song that someone says is the bonus song, I'm like, oh, that would be amazing. Because, like, really, I feel like listening to any of those songs live would be pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we feel really lucky that we got to go. We, part of the reason that we wanted to do this is we know that probably some of our listeners didn't, you know, might have wanted to go and haven't gotten the chance to. And not that listening to us talk about it is the same thing, but, you know, maybe you get to feel a little bit of the energy of what it was like, and the, you know, through as always our very queer lens.
For sure. Should we talk about some of our upcoming episodes that we have?
Sure.
In case our listeners want to kind of follow along, we are talking about doing an episode on the Barbie movie. So it seems like many, many people have already seen that movie because the screenings have been like pretty packed. But the Barbie movie, if you haven't seen it yet, we're going to do an episode on that. We're also hoping to do an episode on the Amazon Prime movie Red, White, and Royal Blue, which we, of course, both read the book and loved.
We're just having a little chat here because I just made Kelsey read that book, and I was like, it's one of my favorite books. It made me cry. I love it so much. And she hated it.
Because I hate love in all its forms. I've been permanently banned from the podcast.
Well, maybe you'll like the movie.
Maybe. Well, I think you with great things, you know.
God.
I appreciate your honesty in saying that you didn't like it and saying that that was why. You could have just been like, I'm anti the monarchy. Like, you could.
I mean, that's part of it, but also.
Baby, you're outnumbered here.
I know.
Outnumbered here. Yeah.
I'll be sleeping on the couch.
Yeah. The podcast fans are going to turn on Kelsey real quick.
No. I think differences are our strength. So
I agree.
Who wants to spend the rest of their life with somebody who thinks exactly like them? Like,
I know.
You could just be by yourself if that was what you wanted.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's always good to have someone who has a different opinion than you do.
Even if that opinion is that love is terrible and, you know,
some people don't deserve to have it.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway. Yes, Red, White, and Royal Blue.
Yes. Yes. And then we had also talked potentially about an episode on, we've done so many Scream episodes, we could potentially do an episode on the classic teen horror movie, I Know What You Did Last Summer, which you would be like, why, Joanna, have you watched that movie? You are scared of all horror movies, including the Scream movies, which you only saw because of Neve Campbell. But I have to say that I Know What You Did Last Summer is Neve Campbell adjacent, because Jennifer Love Hewitt was on Party of Five with Neve Campbell. So that was really... and I watched that like within the last few years, I think, because as you know, we are fans of Ghost Whisperer. And so Kristen was trying to be like a Jennifer Love Hewitt completionist by watching that movie.
Yes. Yeah. That should be really fun. We just rewatched that movie and it was a really good time.
Mm-hmm. It was very fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then eventually in the fall, we're going to head back into the PLL verse. By watching PLL Original Sin, followed by PLL new subtitle, what was it, Summer School or Cruel Summer or whatever it was that the new subtitle is for the second season of that.
Yeah, we'll see. We will see. We will see. Yeah. Yeah. PLL, we're trying this again.
We are. We totally are. And I mean, you know, I think that, you know, we have a lot of different paths that we could go down. I think that we are probably going to find the new series more enjoyable than we would if we, like, dove into trying to recap The Perfectionists or Ravenswood or something like that. Like, I think that this will probably be a better experience for us.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at least it's something sort of new.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're gonna keep the podcast going. It might be, like, a little less regular in terms of, like, sure, our scheduling, just because you guys have wedding planning to do.
We
and,
do.
And life stuff mm-hmm. and everything. But yeah, that's some of what we are planning on coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. And we just, as always, we so appreciate, you know, folks who are still listening to us and still want to hear our opinions on things. And, you know, and as always, I can't necessarily promise that we'll get to them, but you can always send in, like, ideas of things you want to hear us talk about, or, you know, just thoughts or reflections on anything that we have talked about. Yeah, this, now that we're kind of out of the main, what was the main kind of part of the project of this podcast, we feel like, you know, we can sort of kick off our heels and be a little bit more, a little bit more just experimental, do what we want. So, yeah, we welcome that listener feedback. You can, of course, as always, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can check out our Spotify, Everybody A, Everybody Gay. And you can also send in a rating and review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. Kelsey, my beautiful beloved, thank you for being here. Thank you for talking, Taylor.
It was so fun. I'm so happy to be here.
Happy to have you. And, yeah, until next time.
Take care.
Thank you.